It's time to talk about all or nothing thinking. Today, I'm joined by licensed professional clinical counselor, Angela Porter, and she's also one of my dearest friends and coworker at 505 Family Therapy. We're discussing all or nothing thinking, how it impacts people, and what are some of the significant cultural and societal impacts when it comes to thinking black or white, all or nothing, this or that. I'm Annalise Lucero, licensed marriage and family therapist, and your host for today's podcast. This is The Good, The Bad, The Family. Okay, great. Well, I'm really excited to be, I always start off that way. I'm so excited, but I am excited to be joined by Angela Porter, LPCC in New Mexico. Is it LPC or LPCC?
LPCC.
Okay. Licensed professional clinical counselor. Very cool. And today we're going to talk about all or nothing thinking, which I think comes up a lot in our sessions, not just with couples, but with individuals. And it also comes up in my own therapy. So it is an important topic.
Yes. Very, very human thinking.
Yes. So let's start off defining what all or nothing thinking is. What is it to you?
The all or nothing thinking I put into terms, black and white. Mm-hmm. The yes, no, the good, bad, the dichotomy. So it's in this camp or that camp and very little wiggle room.
Yeah. I would say that rigidity is like important to the definition, especially in the context of therapy and relationships and kind of healthy thinking is like being very rigid in one way, like all or nothing. It's right. Either this or it's that.
Right.
Or good or bad. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not and, it's or.
Which is so funny. Like even thinking back to grad school, you know, comm skills class 101, the professor is saying both and. That was like, that was one of our tag things where we would say this or this and I both and, because they were trying to get us young grad students who were starting in this profession to loosen the grip on the all or nothing. Mm-hmm. Even all or nothing, right? Or is in the title of this.
Yes. Yeah. And I think what's interesting is that having that kind of all or nothing, I just had a brain fart. I don't know. That was weird. It just escaped my thoughts. Like, you know, I hate when that happens. Okay. So all or nothing thinking is rigid, black and white, which is funny because all or nothing, black and white is black or white.
Black or white.
Black and white would be gray.
Right. Now we're getting what we want. We want the and. We want the and.
Yes. Yeah. I feel like when you bring up black and white, which you have done this before, you bring up colors and you're like, maybe I just think in these kinds of colors and you think in those kinds of colors. And I think that's really interesting in the context of couples work because, or like, you know, relational work with family or things like that, because yeah. I mean, when you get multiple people into making decisions or trying to create a value system or raise kids or, you know, run a home, everyone's going to have all these different colors that they think in. And so how do you kind of get them together in a way that isn't hurting other people?
And can those colors mix together enough to still create a beautiful palette and not just a muddy thing, right?
That's a
experience.
I wonder too, like how it impacts the individual. Like when someone is so stuck on thinking a certain way or believing a certain way that they don't allow space for themselves to challenge that thinking, like how does that not just hurt them in relationships, but hurt them as an individual?
I feel like that would be maybe even an unconscious or an unknowing hurt to self, because with that rigidity and with that closed offness, then they now withdraw from people. And so isolation.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Because it kind of limits you to like what you're even open to experiencing or learning about, which can close you off to certain groups of people, which I think gets into like a whole other realm of interpreting all or nothing thinking. I was like, because this year on the podcast, I was really interested in exploring things as they relate to men and like the culture of men and masculinity, not just because I'm raising three boys, but because I have to live and coexist in a world with men. So, right. You know, I feel like understanding all of this is really important to me and, you know, helps me to feel like I have some sense of control, which maybe is, you know, put that in the bucket with distorted thinking, all or nothing thinking, right? But I want to speak specifically to how all or nothing thinking kind of encourages emotional suppression in the context of how it relates to men.
Yeah.
Oof. Right. There's like these societal expectations that like pressure men to conform to certain things. And if you don't meet these certain criteria, it's like that all you have to meet all this criteria, you have to be this way or you're not a man. Yes. And I think that's really interesting because it kind of just lends to like, I don't know. Do you think men are more all or nothing thinkers? Can we really gender that?
I don't think we can gender that because I think that it's a societal norm to mm-hmm. think this way. I think that it stems from multiple facets of our society. I know like personally for me, the all or nothing black or white thinking, the rigidity was from my religious upbringing,
mm-hmm.
which created that in my life. But I think it can be, right. Like the origin story of this is everywhere and can be traced to multiple places. So I don't think it's just a gendered thing, but even in talking about this with men, we look at this societal word of gender, the societal, you're either female or male, you're either feminine or masculine. So even that in and of itself is dichotomous thinking. So if you're masculine, you're strong. If you're feminine, you're nurturing. Like how, like, why are those things parsed out and mm-hmm. delineated? And so you're right. Like it's a gender thing. It's not gender specific that just men think that way or live in that world, because we do, I do as a woman too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I think what's interesting about this kind of, you know, masculine and feminine is that one kind of encourages leaning into emotions. I think the feminine, it's more accepted and it's more, it fits in that category of all or nothing. Like, you know, women are supposed to be emotional. Women are supposed to, you know, be empathetic and nurturing. And so when they're not, there's something wrong. Men are not supposed to necessarily have those innate qualities according to like societal norms or expectations. And so when they do, you know, they're not. And so, yes, like splitting these things up. But I would say that, you know, in the theme of what's happening that I see in like TikTok and social media, there's this like decline in men's mental health and like this concern and this worry. And I think there's a lot of pushback on that. Like, well, you're not getting your way now. And so you're seeing like, it's just like really, it makes me as a therapist feel so uncomfortable because I want to hold space for everybody and like make it a safe environment for everyone to heal and understand what's really going on. But I think it kind of goes back to this, like, women are allowed to ask for help. Women are encouraged to seek support from one another, even in women's, in, you know, I would say, of course, there's always exceptions to these things, but I would say it's more common to see women talking about their feelings with each other, you know, mm-hmm. whether it's like happy or sad or grief or whatever, they're sharing, that's a part of their bonding. Whereas men, you know, if you bring those up, you're not a man. And so it's not, there's not really space for that. And so I can see how men who are wanting to speak to their feelings more, who are wanting to learn and understand about themselves more, are kind of being pushed out of this masculine identity, but yet they're not in the feminine identity either. So it's kind of like, where is the space for men who want to be different? Where is the space for men? And I wouldn't say necessarily that that's what social media posts are talking about, but I would just say that I think in my life and my personal experience, there are a lot of men who are trying to change, and there really isn't a space for them to show up and be received fully and wholly. There's still that fear. There's still that caution. There's still the judgment, like, oh, but of seeing a man crying is kind of uncomfortable. Like, I don't know how I feel about that. You know what I mean? There's still that.
Which is why the gray area needs to be celebrated, so that for that, where are they in that space? If they're not over here and tough, and they're not over here and completely emotional, then they're in this gray area, which is okay. Mm-hmm. Because that means that you're able to be both. You're able to be strong and vulnerable. You're able to be open and guarded in a healthy way. And that's back to that all or nothing thinking, is that's where we have to say, okay, for each person, each couple, each struggle, whatever, what is my gray area that I can live in so that I'm not alienating parts of myself, cutting off parts of myself, and growing in my new space, mm-hmm. my new middle ground, my new where feels healthy for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And it just has me thinking of, I feel like I'm kind of like ping ponging between like my clinical experience and then my personal experience and like what I hope to happen and what's really happening. What do you think as a therapist, mm-hmm. you could do to bring awareness to this in your sessions? Like what, it either like, has this ever come up where people are talking about this or like noticing this in their relationship?
I feel like it comes up even if I or one of them don't put the label on it, it comes up every session.
Yeah.
We're either happy or we're not. We're either together or we're not. We're either having sex or we're not. Right. So like, you know, sex to me is one of the biggest things that I work on with my couples and intimacy and things. And so people are like, yeah, we're either happily in our sex life or we're not. And I'm like, have you even defined what a happy and healthy sex life is? Mm-hmm. And to be able to live in the gray area or the middle ground of one person's needs are getting met and the other person's needs are getting met. And so we're both getting our needs met differently at different times. We're flowing between these two extremes, whether we're talking about frequency of intercourse or we're talking about what is even fun, sexy events. But they're like, oh, we're either having sex or we're not. That's buddies. Like, come on, let's broaden this description. So yeah, I mean, I think my clients get annoyed at me when I repeatedly try to bring them back to how do we create, and you know, our colleague Celia talks about this all the time. You as a couple have to define this. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to define what a happy and healthy sex life for you is. I'm not going to define for you what blank is. You guys need to define it for me, and then I can help you navigate how do we get there. And so that awareness, I think, it's almost like every session I'm like, oh, look, that was one of your ideas that you want to bring into this middle ground. Mm-hmm. Can we grow that? Can we foster it? I think that's the hardest part too, going back to our couples work, is when one person's beliefs or values stay in the rigid, which is fine. Right? Like that's a personal choice. That's a personal thing where they're like, there is right and wrong. If they can own, I'm staying here. This is a firm yes, no, right, wrong, good, bad. And I'm going to stay on this side and I'm not going to move. At least getting them to own it.
Yeah, because I think that's what I feel like is hard, is when you have people who feel really confident and sure in their beliefs and what they think and what they think they know. And mm-hmm. then that butts up against their partner or butts up against their employer, right? Whatever. And mm-hmm. it's kind of like, well, how do you create some flexibility? Or when do you say, because I think this is really what it comes down to in most of my sessions is, okay, if you're going to believe that, you have to own it. And you can't expect everything else around you to change. You have to really say, okay, I believe this with all of my heart. I know this to be true for me, and I'm going to own it. And I think that's like a very big difference in like all or nothing thinking mm-hmm. is it's not all or nothing. It's all of this fits for me. And you have to do what fits for you. And if they don't match up, then we need to navigate that. But I think a lot of times people in all or nothing thinking are like, my way or the highway. Totally. Right? Like, you're going to do what I say and what I think and what I believe, and I don't have room for anything else.
Yes.
And that's when it becomes harmful, I think. But I, you know, of course, I can't stay in all or nothing thinking. So I'm like, but when is that not true? When is it not true? When is it absolutely not negotiable to make space, and it needs to be black or white?
Pregnancy, having children. I feel like that's one that I see not regularly, and I see as there is no gray area. You either want to or choose to have a baby, have a pregnancy, adopt, whatever the path is, or you don't. And back to if somebody's saying, I'm all in, I want to have children, and one is saying, I absolutely do not, that cannot, I don't feel, can fit in a way where one person is not then being completely pulled to the other person's side.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, so that's come up for me in a session, and it's hard.
It's so hard.
Yeah. I don't even know how it ended up resolving, because they ended coming to therapy and we're going to figure out a different way. So that's so tough. But yeah, even in that, you have the couple with kind of this all or nothing, like, I am all in on a kid, or I am all out on a kid. And then within that, you're joining this relationship with your own all or nothing thinking, like, no, you have to figure out a way to navigate this, or it's just not going to work out. Mm-hmm. And that is hard. That is hard. I would say that I feel very much like there are non-negotiables when it comes to harming kids.
Sure.
And we've had this conversation even just like personally within our own like social group of like how I feel about spanking. And mm-hmm. I am all in on spanking being wrong. There is nothing that can convince me that spanking is okay or the right choice. And so to really like own that has been a journey for me. To own that in my clinical practice is still an ongoing journey, because how do you sit across from a client who you're supposed to be, you know, building trust with, and telling them, I think what you're doing is wrong. That's almost like kind of like a no-no in therapy. So,
right.
You know, still figuring that one out. But I think, yeah, we all have these things that we're like, this is not okay for anyone to do. There are things that I truly believe, like, you know,
right.
There are things that people should not ever be doing to other people. Right. And there are also things that people should not ever be doing to themselves. And so I think that's when this becomes like distorted thinking. Right? Like, nobody loves me. Hmm. That is an all or nothing thought. Yeah. Nobody loves me. And that's distorted. I think that all or nothing thinking has a place, but also if you find it like every day that you're getting stuck into these loops of like owning something that is putting all of your, you know, what is the saying? All of your eggs in a basket. Right. Then I think you have to really say, but is that true? And give yourself permission to ask, like, how is this really true? Is it true right now?
Isn't that like the, isn't that the number one or a number one? For me, that's like a number one homework assignment. I want you just to think about this week, mm-hmm. think about this idea, how true it is, how real it feels, how important it is. What would it be like if it wasn't all the way true? What if it's only 90% true? What's that 10% feel like? You know, and I, you know, some clients look at me and be like, you're telling me to go think for a week. And I'm like, I really am, you know, driving in the car, think about, like, we'll use your example of like, nobody loves me. Is that really true? Okay, well, somebody loved me then. You know, my mom loved me when I was 5. Okay, well, then it's not all the way true. But does anybody love me now? Well, I don't think so. You know, and they argue with themselves.
Yeah,
but that's where the juice is worth the squeeze. Because even if it's 5% not true, that, you know, your coworker loves you because you bring donuts. Well, there you go. Somebody loves that you exist. Somebody
loves you. Never. No, I mean, I totally agree with you, because I think that's really like the, you know, every therapist, every clinician is going to throw different things at it. They're going to label it. They're going to call it this. They're going to say, do that. Like, you know, to me, what comes to mind is, yeah, CBT, like let's put it on trial, right? That good old fashioned worksheet, like, you know, you're going to be the prosecutor and the defender. Like, oh my God, those exercises. But I think ultimately it's like the art of noticing, right? Mm-hmm. And like having that moment, like you're talking about driving, and this thought that is rooted in something, you know, you got to get curious about it. Like, I'm feeling like nobody loves me right now. What the hell is that about? Instead of just having something come up and then completely just being immersed in that thought and owning it and believing it and letting it consume your actions and your feelings. I think, the art of noticing is really powerful. You know, okay, I noticed that I had this really harmful thought that nobody loves me. What is that really about? Oh, am I feeling lonely? Am I feeling like I need some attention? Do I need some reassurance? Who can I get that from? Like, you go down that rabbit hole and you really discover like what it's about instead of staying at the surface. And I think all or nothing is like, it's keeping people from really knowing themselves.
Isn't there like a meme or a GIF or whatever that like, don't always believe what you think, or don't always believe what you think. So if I have a fleeting thought, nobody loves me, and I believe it, now I'm existing as if it's true. It's the capital T truth. I'm believing what I think, where sometimes what I think is not all the way true, right? Back to people, that rigidity, right? That all or nothing thinking. I do believe that that's the hardest part, or a hard part about counseling, is that I'm tapping on that, being like, is it true? And they're like, yes, it's so true. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know how true it is. And then they get mad, mm-hmm. Because it is a truth that they have believed for so long. For some of us, you know, 41 years, I've believed this thing.
Yeah.
And somebody's saying, I don't know if that's all the way true. I'm like, yes, it is. And it can have people dig their heels in. So back to like how we open this awareness with our clients and our couples and helping everybody to have healthier relationships. Even that recognition, I'm digging my heels in because I'm being challenged by my partner to think differently. Mm-hmm. And I'm rebelling or bucking up against them, versus it still feels really true, but I'm not going to fight. I'm not going to fight for it. I'm going to let somebody tap on it and ask and challenge it, because I've chosen to be in a relationship with this person. Mm-hmm. There has to be a little bit of trust that they're doing this for something, mm-hmm. not malicious intent.
Mm-hmm. Well, and isn't that how we find most people who come to therapy, is that they've had years of loving each other, building trust, connecting with each other, and this stuff starts to come to the surface, and it's because their partner is noticing this about them. They're reflecting back to them like, hey, this is coming up. This is happening. And in the entanglement of relationships, sometimes partners' behavior can reinforce these really harmful thoughts, even though that's not what they're trying to do. And so, you know, there is all this psychology about it, whatever. What really matters is that you start to be curious about it. You start to notice it and you start to make space for like what's coming up instead of just, you know, flowing down the river of that thought. And I think that's what a lot of clients, in my experience, get confused by is when I tell them that feeling that you're having, like, cause we are all about feelings and honor your feelings and, you know, like lean into that feeling. But it's like, the feeling that you're having right there, that is coming up from something that's not even real because it's rooted in this thought, this distorted thought that nobody loves you. And so you're having all these feelings that are connected to that when like all of that is not even real. But it feels real in this moment. And that's like confusing, I think. Like, wait, am I having a real feeling or am I not? And it's like, you're having an experience. You're having an experience. And guess what? You can change the way you experience things by the choices you make.
I mean, yeah, like my pause is 1,000%, Annalise. Yes. Got it done. I'll just, you know, write that on a piece of paper and hand it to all of them to remember in those moments. But gosh darn, when you're in that and it feels real and it feels like the person you love is telling you how wrong, back to that black and white thinking, that all or nothing thinking, what you're doing is wrong. I'm wrong. I'm bad. Mm-hmm. That feels so real. But and you saying I can experience that differently with curiosity. Oh, tell me more about how I'm wrong. Forget it. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what needs to happen is, yeah, see how crummy that feels to feel wrong. And then see if you can experience that feeling differently. I'm not wrong. I'm different and I might be doing some harm or I might be doing something a little bit unhealthily. Mm-hmm. Can I grow that? Do I want to change that? Do I want to change that?
Yeah. Yeah. So it really does. It's like we circle back around to all these kind of things of it really comes to back to you, your awareness and what choices you're making. Mm-hmm. Cause I would think, okay, if you're really going to own it, that nobody loves you, what the hell are you going to do now to find people in your life who will love you? And it's like, either way, we're going to move forward. Either way, we're going to get out of that thinking because staying in that is not a way to live. It's not helpful. Now, I think we're really talking about all or nothing thinking when it comes to like harmful thoughts and not necessarily like these like values and beliefs, right? Mm. So when it comes to these like thoughts that you have about self, mm-hmm. And so maybe it is worth having a discussion. Makes me think of that book we read after symposium called, what was it? The delusional thinking or, Oh my God.
Helpful delusions.
Helpful delusions. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Like really, maybe I'll put that in the, cause he has a podcast. I'll put that in the show notes. And if people want to explore sort of these like bigger belief systems of all or nothing thinking, then that's probably really helpful. But I am so glad we had this conversation. I'm curious, like, what is one tip that you could recommend for people listening to kind of challenge all or nothing thinking? You've given some, but like, if you were to have a client come in and this is what they presented with, what would be the thing that you would say at the end of the session for them?
I think if I was besides just asking them to question it, is I would say, I need you to come back next week with 3 to 5 nuances of both parts, right? Whether it's all or nothing, the black and white. I need you to identify some, because that's what we're talking about, right? The nuances of moving between these things. And so if you can identify even one, two, three nuances that makes one middle ground, one shade, there you go. Now at least you've entertained the other side of the thing.
I love that. Even if it's just moving it a little bit in a different direction, letting yourself expand out of that thought, that's really helpful. Thank you for coming on today. Thank you for encouraging me to keep recording, because I was like totally burnt out. And this is something I do love doing. So I'm glad I made time for it and time with you.
Me too. I love talking to you and challenging, because even in this 30 minutes, I'm sitting here going, okay, I still have distorted thought. I still have black and white thinking.
Oh, yes.
You know, I sometimes blame my Libra sign where I'm, that balanced, right? That scale. Mm-hmm. So this or that. So
yes.
I love it. Thanks.
Yes, absolutely. And I think next time I want to talk about like the fix it mentality. I think that it's like the next step to understanding, you know, thought processes and why do men have like that fix it, I need to fix it mentality. And even women too. I think women often feel like they need to fix themselves, like there's something wrong or something broken with them. So yeah. So put that in your thinkers. And if anyone has questions about that, I always say, like, it's funny, I say this, anyone who's listening, I'm like, I don't even know if anyone's listening.
People listen, my dude.
Okay. Thank you. But yeah, like go to my Instagram, alucero_mft, and just pop on and ask me some questions you might have about fix it mentality or things you want us to talk about or address.
When you say fix it mentality, do you mean that idea where, especially in relationships and couples, where a partner wants to talk and then somebody gives the solutions and like, here's what you should do. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes. Yeah. Like you have a problem, I'm going to fix it. Yeah.
Or why didn't you just do this? Or you should do this. That.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And what's all kind of going on there individually and relationally. I know that's going to be a good one. So definitely subscribe and follow. Oh God. But you have to, because you have to come back and listen. So, awesome. Okay. And we'll see you next time. Thanks for joining, Ange.
Thanks, Annalise. Bye.
If you want to hear more from The Good, The Bad, The Family, please subscribe. Or you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at alucero_mft. Thanks for listening.
Licensed and trained marriage and family therapist, but this podcast is not a replacement for therapeutic advice. If you need help finding a therapist, visit psychologytoday.com to find a therapist in your area.